Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Happy to have you with us. But first, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors we have here on the show. The NFL draft is one of the most anticipated days of any football fan's calendar, and that also means fantasy football season is not too far behind. DynastySportsEmpire.com is going to change the way you play fantasy football. DSE offers fantasy football gamers of all skill levels an opportunity to draft and retain your well-maintained rosters and players for their entire NFL career. Highlighted with large rosters, high-scoring games, easy payouts, and an amazing online community, DSE has everything you would want in a challenging online experience. Please visit them online today at DynastySportsEmpire.com. That's DynastySportsEmpire.com. And check out all the amazing upcoming formats for this upcoming fantasy football season. Go check them out. We got a great episode for you today, so let's get to it.
Hey, this is Frank Meyer, the Streetwalking Cheetahs. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome on back. Hello, Michael. How are you? How goes it?
I'm doing great, Scott. And to all of our fans who are super excited about all of our interesting, weird, and amazing guests, I hope you're not too interested in that in the near future, because it seems like with COVID opening gone and things opening up, it's a tad harder finding people nowadays.
Don't worry about it, Mike. We've been in this position before where we think that suddenly we have no guests and all of a sudden like four or five come out of the woodwork. So I wouldn't worry about it. You were going to be okay is what I'm saying. We're going to be okay.
So you're hiring the mob again to kidnap some people for us?
No, but interestingly enough, I think that one of our guests may have vanished off the face of the planet. A couple weeks ago, we were supposed to interview a guy by the name of Brian Seeley, and he was like a ethical hacker, kind of hired by the government to do things like top secret projects, former Marine. And right around the time we were supposed to bring him on, and we actually rescheduled like once or twice, the whole like Russian pipe hacking of the pipeline happened, and suddenly he just vanished. He never came back onto the Zoom room. He never answered any emails again. So I don't know what's going on with Brian Seeley. So one of our guests may be in a top secret program. He may be dead. I have no idea.
Or maybe he was the Russian who got the money and he said, I don't need to do these stupid podcast interviews anymore. I'm crypto rich.
Yeah,
I don't need this stuff.
Yeah, he's rolling in petroleum money right now, but I don't know what happened to him, man. It was a very strange occurrence, like no email, no nothing. And before that, he was like very thankful about us wanting to have him on, and it was, I don't know, very bizarre.
You can't really roll in the money when it comes to crypto, right? I mean, what do you do, like put a bunch of hard drives on your bed and just roll around on them and be like, oh crap, broke one, there goes 10 million?
Yeah, I guess the visual appeal of being crypto rich isn't as powerful, but I don't think it matters if all of a sudden you have a couple million dollars in the bank. I think I could deal without my Scrooge McDuck moment.
I still got to feel like I'm old because I still don't get this whole crypto thing. I really don't. I mean, 90% of places in the world can't even accept it, so I don't know how it keeps on going higher. And then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, I'll make Dogecoin. And everybody's like, oh my God, that's going to be worth billions.
Did you know if I just left my Dogecoin alone from last summer, I had it at like 0.009th of a cent, something like that. Okay, 0.00, so 9,000ths of a cent. I only put like maybe $300 or something like that in there. And along the way, I bought and sold little pieces. Now I barely have anything. But if I would have just left it when it ran to like 67 cents a coin, I would have had like 40 grand.
Oh.
Yep.
So what you're saying is, don't.
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to follow me for on Twitter for hot financial investing advice, just hit me up. I mean, I could cut your profits in half almost instantly.
Irish Jim Cramer doing his work yet again.
Jimmy,
look at you.
Jimmy O. Cramer here.
You just need like the sound effects and all. Invest in this, bam, 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 and there goes your money.
Yeah, the crypto thing is really interesting. It's amazing how many have popped up recently. Like one of them is called Shiba Inu, is one of the coins. One of them is called Safe Moon, Litecoin. There's a whole bunch of them. But you could certainly, if you catch one on a hot run, you could certainly make a boatload of money if you have the stones, if you will, to kind of fight through the waves of going up and down. So the problem with crypto, and like I only have a tiny, tiny little bit of it, is that there's no stop to it. Like the stock market ends, you know, at the 4 o'clock bell, and then after hours till 8 o'clock max. Crypto, while you're sleeping in the middle of the night, your money's just going up, down, like it doesn't stop. So it's like there's been times I wake up to go take a pee in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh, might as well check out what the crypto is. And it's like bad, man. You just it's kind of very addicting. It's like there's no stop to the train, weekends, nights, holidays, it doesn't matter.
Like you're taking a whiz and you're like, oh my God, I'm a millionaire. And then by the time you get to the bedroom and you honey, wake up, oh, never mind.
No. I'm back to 100-air, babe. I'm back to being 100-air.
I really should have drank all that water. I would have had such exciting news like 10 seconds ago for you.
Yeah.
You've been so proud of me.
No, I mean, it's there's some things that are pretty cool about it. Like I said, if you have a little patience and like you put it in like kind of what you're willing to lose, like if it's a couple $100 or something, then it's not as bad. But, I mean, there's people putting Bitcoin – last I checked, it was about 40 grand today, a coin. At one point, it was 65 grand a coin. So it's certainly an interesting, it's like the Wild West kind of. Yeah, right now it's about 39 grand a coin.
Why don't we develop Shenana coins?
Honestly, it's not that far off of being like a thing that could, like if it could be worth, you know, 0.0000001 cent, and you know what, if it doubles, you double your money, you know.
Yeah,
I think we got to work on the name again. It's kind of
Shenanacoin. First answer is always the best answer. Remember that, Scott. Every time you take a multiple choice test, A all the way.
I never go
A's
A.
Gets A's. Every, okay,
no, everybody knows that C was the answer to go with. I would like to know, like, the psychology of the average person taking a multiple choice test. Do they always, like, is C the most common chosen answer, like, when people don't know?
Well, and in all honesty, like, as I said that joke before, I bet if a teacher did that, like, literally 100 questions, every single one the answer is A, like, even after, like, 10, you're kind of, like, wondering, this can't be right.
Yeah, you'd psych yourself out. Yeah, you definitely start choosing D's and C's or whatever. It'd be one of two things. You'd either psych yourself out or you'd catch on and then just be like, A, all the way down without actually reading the questions. Be like,
Well, that would be like the C- student. Only he or she would get that. It's like, Daryl got 100? How?
Yeah, I remember in high school it was like if you didn't know, people would go abacadabra, like A C A D B, like that was what people tried to follow to see if they could pass the old Scantron.
Yeah, there has to be a way and all.
But
did I ever tell you about the time I cheated on a test?
No, I can tell you a couple times myself.
Yeah, it was in. It's actually in college, and it was some course. Like, it wasn't anything related to my curriculum and all. I went in for computer science. I think it was like chemistry exam or something like that, just something to fill the notes. And I was just bombing the class, and I needed like something there. So it was a Scantron test, and I did as much as I can do, and I'm like, oh my God, this is gonna be atrocious. Like So what I did, I went up to like give in my Scantron because the professor just had it on the other table, and I put it down and I picked it up. And what was not realized is I picked up a person's other Scantron, which I knew this person knew what they were doing.
Right.
And it's just kind of like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. And I was in the bathroom just like updating my sheet.
Beautiful mind. Did you get caught?
No.
All right. What'd you get on the test?
I don't even remember. It was like the final and I passed the course, so I didn't even care what the answer was. It's like if I got a 0 or got 100, doesn't matter. I got my C kind of deals, you know?
Well, Mike, we have a secret guest on the line tonight from from your university, the dean of admissions. You,
Professor Cummings, I knew it all along. Yeah. 30 years I've waited for you to admit it.
I had
no way you knew that much about my chemistry course.
Yeah, I had a couple go rounds of cheating. I remember in middle school, I did the old open notebook on the ground, like kind of tucked it under my desk and would peek at it. I remember in high school, I got caught cheating on a social studies quiz. I think I went with the kind of the same approach, something like that. And my mom they like called my mom and all that stuff. She was not happy with me.
So when the teacher caught you, were you like, you got me? Or was that deer in headlight moment where it's like, I can explain. You see, these are the names of all my favorite Devils players in my Devils cap.
Yeah, this guy was kind of scary. So it was more of a you took it on the chin kind of thing. Like, yeah, you got me. And then like the whole rest of the day was the panic of my mom finding out. Like, oh, boy, here we go. Yeah, she was not happy. And then I remember a couple times writing like I would wear shorts to school all the time, and I would write notes on my thigh. So then I would like pull up the old short leg and then pull it down a little bit, cover it up, and that was a very effective method.
So like when you went to college, you just increased it, and like the professor just thought you had a sleeve on.
Yeah, right.
Like, man, this dude loves tats. Like every week it's just changing colors and words on it. It's amazing.
I think the most creative way I saw someone cheat was they took the label of a water bottle and wrote all the answers on the inside of like a Poland Spring bottle. So like they would just look at their water bottle and the answers would be written in it. Pretty.
Teacher, what are you doing? I'm reading the ingredients. Hydrogen, 2 parts, oxygen. Wow.
just getting hydrated. That's all. You need to have good hydration for the brain to keep going.
I need to know specifically what spring my spring water is from. Like, it's got to come from a good state. I don't want to hear I got some of that Iowa Springs kind of crap. No, no, no.
Yeah.
I need the good states where it's like, yeah, that water's refreshing.
Yeah. But anyway, guys, I know it was a long roundabout intro, so welcome to Verbal Shenanigans here. That's Mike over there, and I'm Scott, and Mike, are you prepared for the world to open? I'm guessing in Georgia it's probably been a little bit more open than up in the Northeast here. But Friday, well, when this comes out, so 2 days ago, the masks are dropped for the most part. You know, everything, bars are open, restaurants. It kind of seems like basically Friday up here is the day that they're going to cut the ribbon, if you will, and let the race start. Wait, do you cut a ribbon at the beginning of the race? I guess you only... No.
No, you no. Shoot up a pistol.
Yeah, we could shoot
a
pistol.
You cut the ribbon from when it's... Are you like...
opening a business.
Or the ceremonial shovel, pick up some dirt and throw it 2 feet and then tell guys who make $8.25 an hour, okay, now move 3 tons of that.
Yeah. So either way, one of my analogies will work is what I'm saying. Yeah, but,
one of them.
Are you ready for the
like
world?
It's like when you're in the marathon and you have to wait for the officials to cut the ribbon. Got it, Scotty.
Correct.
Got
it. Correct.
As for down here, yeah, I mean, it is kind of, I mean, we were more open. Obviously, we never had like any kind of full, I mean, we had some laws there and then they kind of eased it up early, like Kemp trying to buddy up against his party. And he was like one of the first ones to go, we're opening up things and whatever. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of nice, like the relaxation and kind of like since I got my shots, I can sit back and relax and don't care. I mean, I read the room kind of, if you will. Like anytime I go into a store and look around and kind of get a percentage of how many people are wearing a mask and so forth. If there's a good chunk that are wearing masks, I don't mind. I put it on and all because I'm sitting back like I don't care either way. I feel good.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if I go to like some place and I'm seeing nobody's wearing a mask, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Let's join in.
Yeah, I thought you meant by reading the room, like you read them, and then if they were ready, you dropped that vagina joke that you put on Facebook from 12 years ago on them. You know, just throw it out there.
They're not ready. We got to be at least 3 or 4 months in past the pandemic for them to be prepared for the genius that was Michael Berlew circa 2009.
Yeah, this was even before you tried the stand-up career. This was like, well, you're, well, why don't you pull that up? Pull that up real quick. Let me also.
All right, let me
pull that up.
Find it. Hold on.
But yeah, as you're pulling that up, I'm ready for the opening of the world, man. I like kind of similar to you. Got this shot. At this point, it's just kind of, and when I see the cases in New Jersey, I think the other day it was like 250 or something like that, whereas one point it was like 5,000 a day. I'm ready to go outside and to actually go in places and kind of return back to normal again. And it's funny, they're like, people who aren't vaccinated got to wear a mask. I'm like, are you kidding me? You think one person that's not vaccinated is going to be like, oh, I didn't get it. I'm gonna sit this one out with my mask. These people are gonna be like, "Woo!" You know, thank you, vaccinated people. You know,
I would love there to be a person out there that's like, I'm too scared of the vaccine, but I'm also too scared of the virus. Ergo, it's like 2025, and it's still, Joe, take off the mask. No, man, I'm still reading articles and think if I'm gonna get this shot.
There will definitely be people who wear masks going forward. There's going to be people that are just kind of like comfortable with it, and they'll be like, oh, I have, you know, maybe I have disease kind of issues or sickness. And I guarantee you, I think we will see masks, you know, here and there for the rest of our lives. Like, there will be people wearing it, and it won't be that like shocking to see. Like, think about that. Like, a year and a half ago, if you went to like a restaurant or a bar and you saw a couple guys in the corner wearing masks, you'd be like, what the hell is going on over there? Now it's going to be like, oh, they're wearing their mask.
That's not Pete. And yeah, suck your Miller Lite down your mask. Gotcha, Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're safe. You're safe. You got to wonder, and all, like, you know, there was some person who just started their mask company like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that, where they're like, no, I put all my I put everything into this. I took all my money out of Bitcoin, you know, that night before it went out to 40 grand.
Yeah. They do say with Bitcoin, the only way to like relax is just to put the money in and literally don't check it just let it sit there. It's kind of like a retirement account. All right, yeah, drop this gene. Like, give us a picture of what was going on in your life at this time. So you were 2009. This
2009. I'm feeling pretty good because that was the year after Phillies World Series.
Yeah. So, you're all fired up. You're all fired up. You're wearing your Jimmy Rollins jersey.
Yep, it's May, so it's like we're the defending champions.
Ah, yes.
So let's go back, way back. May 24th, 2009. Mike Berlew. I just saw a commercial where a girl was on a trampoline and then states she was not going to ruin her fun with teenage pregnancy. I can only assume the bouncing feeling goes up her vagina or something. It's a time. It's 2009. That killed in the clubs in 2009.
Yeah, I read that the other day. I was cracking up to myself because I was like, I was having more. It wasn't even so much like the attempt at the joke or whatever. It was more like me picturing you kind of like all ramped up in the apartment one night. Like, kind of like, dude, this is going to, this is going to be hysterical. You know what I mean? And, like, you posting that, like, you having this thought and being like, yeah, but yeah, bouncing is going to go through their vagina. Like, oh, my God. And then posting this thing. And then I'm picturing you reading it 12 years later, like, what the hell was going through my head that night?
I mean, I can at least say as a comedian, it was like a weird thing because it was a legitimate commercial about, it was some like church or whatever. Like, this is what we do not to have teenage pregnancy. And one of them is
right.
Literally just like a 17-year-old girl. I'm not going to ruin my life with teenage pregnancy.
Right.
It's like, what? Does that make sense? So then the brain goes, hey, Mike, why don't you make a joke about it and put it on Facebook?
Yep.
And you know, history was made that night.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if, like, maybe right after that you were like, you know what? I think I could do stand-up comedy. Like, that was, like, maybe, like, that was the moment, like, this joke. If I open with this, how are you not going to book me? Like,
exactly. And you look at the like the booker's eyes as it's kind of squinting, and I'm like, I know, that's only the opener.
there's more where this came
there
from.
There is a tight 15 that comes after that, my friend. Believe me, don't you worry. That's not the only one in this arsenal.
I remember we did it on the show here. It's got to be at least 3 years ago, but we played my. We played my first ever open mic, and oh my God, it was 5 minutes of pure torture. Like, just the cringiest, like, crudest jokes that didn't really, like, make any sense. It was, like, just going for that shock value. And it's funny, because now being, like, I don't know, I can't call myself a veteran, but someone who's been doing it for a while now, you see the newer comics, like, kids who just started. And it's still the same thing. Like, the young new comics always go for, like, the cringiest, like, ballsiest, you know, non-PC topics. And it's always the same. It's always like, like, you get this reaction from the crowd. It's like, I don't know what it is. When you're coming up, you think everything that you got is so funny and cutting edge. And then you realize as you get older, like, man, you got to be really smart to make dirty jokes work.
Yeah, on any kind of consistent basis. I mean, when everybody just goes, all right, your answer is going to be penis this, vagina that, in her, whatever.
Yep.
It's going to get figured out pretty fast. And then you kind of realize as you kind of do the open mics, or even if you get on the show, it's like, okay, only certain people really get into this kind of.
Like, when you look out at a crowd and half of them are older couples, half of them are women, and the first thing you're going up there is like, you know, hey guys, what do you think about anal, you know, like,
yeah.
Immediately the crowd goes, oh boy, I didn't want to come to that. It's funny
because
when I first started, I thought there was a big group of like comics who kind of thought they were like in the almost in like the Opie and Anthony kind of comic days. Like, you remember everything was kind of like shocky and you know, cringy and die, AIDS, I hope you that. And then I think they quickly realized that worked because those comics were all friends and they were all kind of also on a time in the radio where like that kind of shock worked. And they realized quickly that does not work in a crowd paying for a dinner and a night out. Like, that's not really what they want.
Yeah, and I think also those guys also realize A, there's a bunch of other guys who are doing it, and they probably can tell it a little bit better.
Yep.
Or B, unfortunately, they find the other, like, four comics that are exactly in their ring. They're, yeah. And then it's like, the bad boys of comedy.
100%. 100%. There's a group right now of a couple guys I could think of that they're still doing, like, that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, oh, that poor audience, man.
Take a wild guess at a few. I'll just type something out.
there was a comic not too long ago. I won't say his name, but I always thought that he was just emulating Jim Norton's old act. Like, everything Jimmy used to be, like, back in the day, the WNEW days, he was just doing exactly what he was doing. And this is 20 years later, and it just doesn't hit. And every time I've ever seen him, it just, the crowd just does, there's, like, a few guys in the crowd that are like, ha, 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 and then the rest of them are just like, ew. You know, that's just not great. That's just not great.
And even the better ones are the ones that it's like, oh, did you hear them cringe? No, I loved it. Oh, yeah. It's like, no, those are the people who are trying to eat and don't want to come back now, worrying that you'll be back here in next Tuesday, next month.
And even like the best headliners I know, they'll like work up to their dirty stuff. Like, they usually don't open out of the gate with like all dirty stuff. They usually like will win the crowd over, and then they're with you to take that ride into like smart, dirty jokes. There's nothing wrong with a dirty joke. It's just when people like rely completely on that, it usually never works. But
I heard George Carlin was famous for just saying the seven dirty words and not have a punch. Like, he just he said all seven, and then he was quiet for the next 5 minutes before he told his next.
Yeah, I mean, that guy never wrote anything. I mean, he was not a big writer, George Carlin.
Yeah, that's why he's known as the greatest one-time open micer.
Yeah,
George Carlin. That's it.
Well, I guess before we get to, I guess I will tell you real quick. I told you last week I was putting on another one of these lake shows, outdoor shows. And we did two last year, and they were phenomenal. And this year, I was a day of, we were up to 150 something tickets. By the end of it, we were up to 187 tickets. So great, fantastic number of people. And Mike, you've known me for quite a long time now. One of my favorite things is to like try to make sure things sound good. Like, in fact, when we met, we were doing another radio show, if you can call it that, internet radio show, I guess you can call that. And Mike was doing more of the computer and phone and internet stuff, and I was doing like all the sound stuff. And I would spend hours. We spent hours setting up different things, and the guy we did it with bought like 8,000 new things all the time. Blah 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 blah. We've told the story before, but sound. I've always really enjoyed like making a show sound good. Like even the other night at Tap House, a couple of the comics were like, "Oh my god, the sound is like was so good. Like you really take like." Good job with the sound, like, which I don't know if it's a roundabout way of being like your set terrible, but the sound, fantastic sound.
I hated everything I heard, but it was so crystal clear. It was amazing. I was just sitting there going, this guy's an idiot in some ways and a genius in others, and it's not the way he should really be going in direction.
I was just sitting there going, man, I absolutely am sure he sucks because I hear it so clearly. I didn't mishear his joke. I didn't not understand what he was saying. He definitely sucks because that sound is phenomenal.
Like, I started walking away from the stage disgusted by how terrible your jokes were. But as I was half a mile down the road, I'm saying, man, I can still hear him, man. I am so happy and pissed off at the same time.
Yeah. So the show is going phenomenal. I will say, one thing I will pat myself on the back, if you will. When I have a show that I know is going to be a little wonky, or it's like, you know, outdoor comedy is really, really hard. That it's not really a secret. Yeah. So the hosting spot is by far the most difficult, because you're taking now, which you could argue hosting spot in any show is the most difficult, because you're going up, cold crowd, people still settling in, food being ordered, drinks, blah, 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 blah. So now the outdoor. Now, I still got the sun setting. You know, I still got people grabbing drinks, setting up chairs. And one thing I do try to do is take any pressure off the comics that I hire. Like, you know, Mike, I'm hiring you. I don't need you to host. I'll go bite the bullet. So I go up. I did about probably 18 minutes, something like that. And the first nine, man, woof. But, and it's funny because the two nights before that, we had Tap House, the first indoor one in over 15 months. Same thing, man. The first 9 minutes, it was like the tables, like people forgot how to go out. And that's probably literally what it is. Like, people probably have not seen each other in a public setting where they can get drinks and relax. And so the first 9 minutes, just talking, ordering, people just like, blah, blah, blah. At one point, I was on the stage, and I just, like, stood there. I was like, well, we're going to wait this one out. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to wait till you guys, you know. I was like, I know we haven't been out in forever and we forgot how to do things publicly. But back before the pandemic, comedy shows, you listen to the comic. You know? So now the lake show, the outdoor show, wasn't quite that bad. It was just like the energy outside just kind of goes into, I don't even know how to explain it. It just kind of goes into the atmosphere somewhere. And
yeah, there's nothing to bounce off of. So even if a couple, as people say, laughter is kind of, it kind of grows with people. Exactly. So if a couple people are chuckling and they can hear it, a next show comes up, it maybe half bad, you start laughing, that starts building a crowd. When you don't have walls, it's kind of hard to get the whole crowd kind of in the mood, like, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Hence why the best clubs and the best shows are where basically people are on top of one another and really close to the stage, you know? That, like, the small comedy clubs, that's why the ceilings are low, everything's tight, everything's jammed in, small tables. Those make the best shows because laughter is contagious, as hacky as it sounds. But so the first couple things, oh, my God, it was like you could kind of hear them, like, bounce off the lake water, you know? It's like, boo, boo, boo. It was like rough. But then I would say about 7-8 minutes in, everything started to turn and people started to settle in. And it's funny, I'm trying a bunch of new stuff, and I'm like, yeah, all right, for a second, I got to go back into the well for a minute and go with a joke that, and here's the other pressure. A lot of these people have seen me now a couple times because I've done the lake show, and that always gets in my head, like, oh, half the crowd's seen me. I got to do all this new crap. And then I realize, like, you know, if the other half hasn't seen you, then you can at least get half the crowd laughing with your old jokes, and then the other people who've seen you be like, yeah, that was funny. I remember that joke. You know, I'd rather have half the crowd shocked at, like, a well-written joke than 100% of the crowd, like, kind of laughing at a new joke that's not worked out yet at all. Like, because I was really trying jokes that, you know, after I got off the stage, I'm like, oh, boy, we gotta tighten that one up a little bit. We gotta find the pace of that one.
Okay, I give you permission to use my trampoline joke so you can calm yourself down and then you can hit your new material, okay?
I mean, thank you. This has been a long roundabout way of me getting ready to ask you if I could.
I read the room and I'm like, I know what you want. You may have it.
Sell it. Sell it to me. I'll buy the joke for $5.
Ooh. I can get a half a percent of some Dogecoin.
Yep. I always wondered with people who sold jokes, like if I was like say you bought a joke from me, like back in the day for $250, I wonder if they were just like, ha, sucker, I'm still using that joke forever, you know what I mean? Like, how are you ever going to know, like, especially the old road comics with no internet and stuff like that? Like, because it's pretty common to buy jokes from people. Like, I remember a couple people we used to work with be like, yeah, I sold a joke here, I bought a joke from someone. Pretty interesting. But there's no, like, legal binding terms. Like, this is my joke. Like I bet you a lot of card artists back then. Like, yeah, you bought it. It's all yours. The next night, hey, you guys want to hear my mattress joke? You know, the same thing. Go ahead.
I wish you should have bought it from Sinbad more often. Yeah, that's why I'm here.
So the show goes great. All the comics are doing well. And then Buddy Fitzpatrick gets on. He's one of my favorite headliners. Sound is great. The vibe is great. Everyone's having a good time. And then out of nowhere, like, Buddy's up there for about 4 minutes. And all of a sudden, I start hearing, I'm like, oh, no. The sound is going out. And he's a consummate professional, so he's handling it well. Meanwhile, I'm, like, getting stabbed in my soul. I'm like, this is the worst. Now, I go behind the stage, and this is in basically a field that's dark. So all the XLR cables are black. You know, they're run all over the place. And I'm sitting there trying to replace cables. I'm behind the stage handing him, like, a new mic. And it's my fault because when you do these shows and you start bringing the same cables all over the place, eventually they start to get beat up and worn out and get dirty, and the inputs, eventually you got to start to replace your gear. Like, you do have to, like, get new cables eventually. It's happened here on the podcast. There's been nights where I'm like, I got to get a new cable. Like, right now, it's funny because I'm holding the mic. I never hold the mic while we're doing this. And it's because I think I might have chose the cable that was wonky from the other night. So I'm holding this. And, yeah, so you got to kind of, like, service. But consummate professional, handled it. Eventually I get the sound dialed back in. And just the reaction after the show was, like, phenomenal. Like, people were like, you can't go indoors ever again. Like, you got to keep doing this outdoors. And I'm like, man, if you would have told me 2 years ago that outdoor comedy was going to be something people loved, I'd be like, there's no way, man. There's no way. But I think there's something to people like sitting by the water and, like, bringing their chairs and, like, having beers, like, outside. But overall, it was a pretty phenomenal night. But, man, the sound thing is devastating.
It'd be great if, like, you guys, I just got into the New York City Comedy Club. This is my big break. No way, man. They got walls. You're not like that. We told you that. You keep your own way.
You're the outdoor guy. You're the outdoor guy, man. You can't do the indoor. But
no way, man. In fact, we should try a new one underground. We just start digging, and then we put the stage 6 feet under, and then you do your set from down there.
Yeah, man. We'll just put the speakers on the ground. We won't even see you. You'll just be speaking underground. but anyway, it's time to get to our guest. But yeah, as far as the outdoor shows, if anybody wants to, before we get to our guests, if anybody wants to come to one of these, we're doing one more at a lake here in Denville called Rock Ridge on July 9th. So if anybody wants to come to that, it is open to the public. That's why I do mention that. So we're coming up on our guest here. So our guest tonight has been part of, I guess you could call him a punk band. Been around, very, like, influenced by the Stooges, early punk like that. They've been in a band for a long time. They just are releasing their first album in basically 20 years, recording an album together called One More Drink. And we're going to get Frank Meyer from the Streetwalking Cheetahs on the show. And Frank was a really cool guest. This interview goes into places I never really thought it would with some of the things this guy's done, so I'm not going to spoil that for you, but here is our interview with Frank from the Streetwalking Cheetahs. So Frank, first off, thank you for joining us. I know we had a scheduling hiccup along the way, so it's finally nice to sit down and talk to you. I guess my first question for you is, why'd you guys get together so soon? Why'd you get back together so soon? Only 20 years was
Well, I mean, it wasn't quite like that. It was more like so the band started around 95.
Right.
We played until, you know, around early 2000s we broke up, but not like any due to, it wasn't like we had some sort of drama or anything. It was more like we were playing for, like, you know, almost 10 years, just grinding it out. And we were one of those bands where, like, we got that hip indie credibility, and every magazine would be like, these guys are going to be huge. And then we just never got huge.
Right.
After so many years of playing, like, Missoula, Montana, and Denver, Colorado for, like, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh time. And, like, right, the audiences went from, like, getting bigger to sort of smaller. And we were just like, what is happening? And eventually, you know, like, we started the band in the Streetwalking Cheetahs in our early 20s. And then by the time we were in our mid 30s, like, it just didn't make a lot of sense at that particular point in our lives.
Right.
So we all stayed friends. We did other things. We played musically and we raised kids and did other things. And then we got back together when all of a sudden it made sense to play together again. And we've been doing it ever since. And finally we made a goddamn record.
Yeah. So let me ask you also, like, if you think back to the 90s and you think back to today, where it is so easy to, we can jump on the Zoom call and talk to you, you know, across the country. We could, sure, you know, you can keep the band together. You can meet whenever you want and share files and share idea. does that factor into it too? Like, as far as like being able to, it's not as much as like, hey, we all got to be on the exact same schedule every single week. You can at least get some ideas generated.
It does and it doesn't, in the sense that like this record, which is our new album, One More Drink,
yep.
It came out and we did make that record all in a room together.
Right.
You know, we would do, you know, blast through a bunch of takes and pick our favorite take and then sort of build everything back on that, the way that, you know, people make old fashioned records.
Yep.
That being said, we had most of the tracks done that way. And then COVID hit and we still had a few things to finish up, which, like you said, we, you know, all of a sudden trading files and all that digital technology came into play. And we were doing that stuff sort of anyways on our own. But the big thing was that the last track we recorded for the album Warzone, that was one that, like, COVID hit, everyone was on lockdown, and then all those Black Lives Matters riots were happening, and, like, all of a sudden, in addition to this huge worldwide pandemic, you had this social strife and these, you know, big stuff going on. And so we wrote Warzone right before that, as Trumpism was going on and all that seething anger. I was like, man, can you imagine what if in a few weeks just – there was like riots in the streets and people just had to take the streets with guns and we're just like, boom, 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 let's just get at it. And then all of a sudden we made this song and then like 2 weeks after it got released, boom,
yeah,
it happened.
Right.
And so we put that song on the record, which originally was recorded as a garage band track. But then eventually we all, like you said, you know, traded files and we recorded live drums and like made it all happen and made it an album worthy track, Sonic.
Recording in progress.
But, you know, that was sort of our vibe with that track. But everything else was, we did the old-fashioned way. We got into a room, rehearsed it, recorded it.
Awesome.
What was, like, that first day getting back together? Is it just sort of like, we're back in our 20s, this is awesome? Or was that, like, that awkward kind of, like, looking around, well, like, you guys remember that one song we did? No?
It was a little bit of both, because the thing is that after the Cheetahs broke up, myself and a guy named Bruce Duff, who at the time was our A&R guy at Triple X Records. So like when we got signed to Triple X Records, we had this A&R guy named Bruce Duff, and he also was a musician. He played in a band called The Ads, which at the time when The Adolescents were not happening and reunited, there was a spinoff band that Tony Adolescent had called The Ads, and Bruce played in that band. So he was like our homeboy. So when the Cheetahs broke up, he and I formed a band called Sweet Justice. And then Sweet Justice morphed into this metal band called Angus Khan. And then Angus Khan ended up featuring Dino from the Cheetahs. And then at that point, most of the Cheetahs were back in a band together. And all of a sudden we were like, well, what the fuck? Let's just, you know, what are we doing? Like, let's just, the only band that anyone knows us from is the Streetwalking Cheetahs. And we're like dancing around it at this point. So like, why don't we just like get back to being the Cheetahs? So that's when we got, this is about 5-6 years ago, we decided like, F it. We got our original drummer, Mike Sessa, and myself and Dino. And then the only member that was essentially unavailable was Art Jackson, our original guitar player. But we replaced him with Bruce, who at that point was in Angus Khan, was in Sweet Justice, signed the Cheetahs. He was in the mix and sort of our homeboy. So at that point, that became sort of the new Cheetahs.
You know? First off, I love the name Angus Khan.
Yeah, well, we're like it was like Genghis Khan and Angus Young. What if it was like a barbaric metal band?
Yeah, I love
it. I just want to see him in the schoolboy outfit, just rocking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we were like, it was like we were sort of like Manowar meets AC/DC. You know what I mean?
That's pretty cool. So I usually never ask bands how they get their band names. I find it kind of like, you know, they probably answered this a million times and whatnot. But when you throw out Angus Young and then you have a Streetwalking Cheetahs, I got to ask, what is the origin of that? Were you guys just young and thought of something quick, or is there a story behind that?
No, there is a story, which is that, so when the band formed, I had been in a bunch of bands and, you know, things were just kind of not going great, you know. It was like, oh, this band didn't work out, that band didn't work out. And I used to go to this video store in the Valley, and this is back in the, this is like in the mid 90s when you would go rent DVDs and stuff, you know, at a video store.
Yep.
And there was a place called 2020 Video in the Valley off Ventura Boulevard. And I would go there, and I would be wearing like a Stooges or a Dead Boys or Plasmatics or Clockwork Orange or Night of the Living Dead t-shirt. And the guy behind the counter, Dino Everett, would be wearing that same, so he'd be having like a Blood Feast t-shirt or like some Reanimator shirt, he said.
Yeah.
And we would be like, oh man, we would talk punk rock and horror movies. And then we formed the band based on this idea of like, man, screw all this like trying to get signed and being like a big, let's just like play some obscure songs by like the Germs and the Runaways and the MC5 and the Stooges and our favorite bands that at the time. These bands, like now they're kind of legendary, but in the mid 90s, these bands were sort of like obscure and no one really knew who they were. And it was like, we were just way into that stuff. So the band was formed doing covers of that. Right. And then we just started writing original songs. And then we got signed to Bomp Records and we did a few records there. And then we got signed to Triple X Records and we did a bunch of records there until we broke up. And then like 10 years later, reformed.
Like when you start off and you're doing like covers, when was the moment you kind of say, let's start doing some original stuff. Let's make our own voice.
Well, I'll tell you the exact moment is that like, so, I mean, for us, it's one night. We were playing the Coconut Teaser and we basically at this point had like a 10 song set and it was 7 or 8 of them were covers. So we were doing like the Runaways. We were doing like Cherry Bomb and, you know, I Want to Know What Love Is by the Dead Boys and Black to Calm by the MC5 and, you know, a bunch of Stooges and blah, blah, blah. And then we had written 2 or 3 songs that kind of just sounded like those songs. You know, we were like writing these songs sort of in the tradition of those songs. And I knew Greg Shaw. So I was such a Stooges fanatic that I read in this book that all those bootlegs that you hear, the Iggy and the Stooges and all those like bootlegs that came out with like Kill City and that they all came from the fact that Iggy and James Williamson, when they were all strung out on heroin, sold all these tapes to Greg Shaw. And Greg Shaw had a record company that was located in Burbank. And at the time, I lived in the Valley. And literally one day, like smoking, you know, like bong hits, I was like, I mean, couldn't I just call Greg Shaw and like go over to it? And I did. And I just called and his wife, Susie Shaw, answered with like, hello, Bomb Records. And I was like, hey, my name is Frank. And I'm like totally a fan and stuff. But like, could I come over and like hang out and buy records? She was like, yeah, totally. Sure. And I did. And then as I was leaving and I brought with me the guitarist of the Streetwalking Cheetahs at the time, you know, the guy who I formed the band with, Art Jackson. And as we were leaving, I saw this like hippie dude with like sort of a Beach Boys haircut. And I was like, oh, that's Greg Shaw. And he bopped in. And I was like, I went up. I was like, and, you know, this is sort of how I've gotten like every like we, you know, the Cheetahs ended up backing up Wayne Kramer, Sylvain, Dennis Tech, Cherie Curry. And this is the way we get every gig is that I see someone and I run up all excited and go like, hey. I'm Frank and I'm totally into like the Stooges and stuff and you did all this stuff and like I would totally get excited to be like involved in that, like, I don't know, do you need help like cataloging your material? And the guy's like, I mean, I guess, are you basically saying you'll like go through all my tapes and help me catalog them? And I'm like, yeah, totally. And I did it, and I went through all of the Stooges tapes and wrote the liner notes for like the entire Iguana Chronicles series, which was 5 CDs of Stooges releases the Bomp put out, and I became his, he called me the Stooges historian. And so as I was doing all those liner notes and archiving his tapes and writing it, me and Dino formed the Streetwalking Cheetahs, and we were doing a lot of, guess what, Stooges covers. And so I said to Greg Shaw, like, why don't you come down to the Coconut Teaser and see us? Except he was really, I think he was fucked up that night. And like, I just don't think he fully realized that like everything we were playing, or not everything, but like most of it was cover songs. Mm-hmm. Cause after the show, he came up to me kind of wasted. He was like, man, you guys are great. And I go, oh, thanks, bro. He goes, those songs are amazing. And I'm like, well, yeah. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, you know, this is all songs you've like released pretty much, you know? And he goes, you know, you got more songs like that? And I go, yeah. And he goes, listen, I'll sign you right now. And I go, all right. And then I ran backstage to the band. I go, well, I got good news and bad news. The good news is we just got signed to Bomp Records. The bad news is we have to come up with a whole bunch of material that sounds like the Runaways and the Stooges and the MC5 and the Germs and Fear and all of our favorite bands. And that's what we did. And that's sort of the with the foundation of the band.
That's hysterical. It's like he almost fed him back his own music and got.
it was the music that we loved,
right?
You know, it was, I had this weird connection to him, and somehow. I mean, don't get me wrong. Over the years, the band has grown, and we definitely and as represented by Bomp Records as well, we always had a power pop influence. So we were very into the Flaming Groovies and Cheap Trick and all that stuff. And Bomp was also doing that, but. I would definitely say that a lot of our history sort of stems back from that original sort of like we got hooked up with Greg Shaw and Bomp Records, and we were doing all these covers, and that's why we were called the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs, because the opening line of Search and Destroy, to answer your original question, is I'm a streetwalkin' cheetah with a heart full of napalm. And so since we were doing Stooges songs, among others,
right.
We were doing a bunch of Stooges songs. We called ourselves the Streetwalking Cheetahs, and we figured that anyone that knew the Stooges would be like, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it bit us in the ass, because as we became an original band and we're trying to sort of break away from being like a Stooges-style band, people would be like, Streetwalking Cheetahs, I get it. You're like a Stooges band. We're like, well, I mean,
It started that way, and then it became after it happened.
And then you got to tell that story like 8 more times. It's a vicious cycle.
And then the irony is, after 25 years of me sort of trying to pull away from like the Streetwalking Cheetahs, the Stooges, I ended up becoming the singer with James Williamson of the Stooges, and I did 2 albums with him now, where. I did James Williamson and the Pink Hearts, and then I also wrote a bunch of songs with James Williamson and Dennis Tech. But essentially,
it's cool.
I ended up getting a call from the guitarist of the Stooges and becoming his sort of collaborator. And so now, after all these years, I'm just like, yeah, fuck it. It's the fucking Stooges.
Yeah.
Whatever, man. It all came full circle. Fine. I'm into it, you know?
That's amazing. So tell us about One More Drink. Tell us about this album and...
I will tell you right now, as I have one more drink.
You got practice tonight.
Nice setup,
so.
Scott. Good
thank
job.
You, yeah,
you.
See.
Good segue.
Yeah.
Because the folks don't know, if they're not seeing this, I just had a drink and they saw it. We got back together a few years ago, and all along the way we were writing new songs, but we weren't necessarily thinking towards an album. I think some of it was just that we were playing lots of gigs around the West Coast, and that was kind of, you know, we're a West Coast band, and back in the day we used to tour Europe and we would tour the States constantly. But nowadays, really, we just kind of go up and down the West Coast because that just makes more geographical sense for us.
Yep.
And we didn't really want to just, you know, play all the old songs all the time. And we made a lot of records, so we have a lot of songs to choose from. But we started writing new songs, and eventually it felt like, oh, we've got a bunch here, and there was sort of a direction here. There was sort of this like Motorhead-y punk metal thing going on, but also this sort of Cheap Tricky power pop thing going on. And there was definitely like sort of a nod to the 80s happening in a lot of the new songs. And so we decided to just, you know, round it out, make the record. And we wanted to have a few guests on the record that kind of made sense, because over the years of the band, we've collaborated with a lot of, you know, people like I was saying, Wayne Kramer, Cherie Curry, Sylvain. But somehow this time around, we ended up doing this song called One More Drink that was sort of a nod to like Dramarama of all things. Like, I'm a huge Dramarama fan. You know that song? I love that band, and we wrote this song that was sort of like a nod to Dramarama, and we thought, wouldn't it be cool to have John Easdale from Dramarama sort of like sing it with me as kind of like a harmony thing, and we made that work. And then we wrote this song called The Rejected that was like this total West Coast sort of OC punk thing, which was new to us, because most of our sound has always been like more of a Detroit or CBGB's vibe, but the new record has a lot of like West Coast nods.
Yeah.
And so we got Rick Agnew from the Adolescents to play on The Rejected, which was like very much an adolescent sort of tip of the hat. So
it's cool.
This album, you know, it's our first in damn near 20 years. We recorded other songs,
right,
you know, here and there, and put them out on compilations and stuff, but this is our first full record, and it's very hooky and very power poppy. But at the same time, it's definitely got a lot of like just chainsaw, rip your head off rock and roll.
All Are you guys like foaming at the mouth? You know, COVID's, you know, it seems like things are starting to open up and we're going to see live music again. And, like, you know, are you guys like foaming at the mouth to get out there and play these songs for people?
We certainly are. And so what I've been doing this whole time is I just grinded into like acoustic mode, and all around the West Coast, I've been just been like doing this like acoustic punk rock show where I play like Cheetah songs and Ramones and Iron Maiden and Van Halen, and I just do it all acoustically and do this whole fucking like one man band thing. But all the while I've been working, you know, these Cheetah songs happening. And so we've been rehearsing. We just booked July 16th at DP Oz's in Long Beach, July 17th at the Poorhouse in San Diego, and August 14th at the Doll Hut in Anaheim. And those are the first Cheetah shows in a year and a half, damn near, because of this COVID
stuff. Crazy, yeah.
And in fact, when we get off the phone, I'm running off to Streetwalking Cheetahs rehearsal because we just started rehearsing again for the first time in all this time. And like I said, we did make a few recordings, but it was all, you know, remotely, you know. And this is the first time, last week was the first time we were all in a room together blasting, you know, like kicking the tires off the old car, like, all right, man, let's get this thing up and running again.
Dusting off the old moves, you know.
Exactly. I'm like, ah, my neck hurts.
Stretching before as a band.
No, but you know, for me, man, I swear to God, dude, my zone, because like I live here in Long Beach, and Long Beach is like, it's a small town, and like as soon as anyone could do anything on a patio, I was like in every single club in Long Beach doing my thing. And the second you could go inside, and the second you could do good two people, three, I've been on top of that stuff. So
that's cool.
You know, I don't mean as a touring musician, I just mean in like my town, you know, this COVID shit, like I got unemployed off this stuff, like you know, all of a sudden I was like sort of forced to like really making a living off being a musician in a time when you couldn't make a living off being a musician. But I made it work like this whole time. Like I've been paying my rent off doing, you know, basically session work online or Bandcamp stuff. You could look me up on Frank Meyer, the Streetwalking Cheetahs on Bandcamp, or blah, blah, blah. coming out July. Or, you know, I've been doing is basically picking up all these acoustic gigs and just taking what I do, which is high energy rock, and translating it into an acoustic show, which is just blasting out like rock and roll, and or turning it all really into kind of like outlaw country songs.
That's great.
I'll do like Iron Maiden and Cheetahs and Johnny Thunders and Ramones and Van Halen and Neil Young, and it all just sounds like outlaw country.
That's great.
You know? That's awesome.
I love when people adapt like that. It's good.
I mean, as you're talking, you know, I can clearly see you're not just like a performer, a punk. You are a pure heart fan of it. As you're talking about like, oh, I got to performing this guy, that guy, are you like, when you meet up to with them, are you kind of like, oh, I'm an equal, you're a performer, how's it going? Or are you still like secretly, like deep down, like fanboy, like, holy Christ, I can't believe I'm performing with you. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
It's totally both of those things, meaning like, generally, when I approach those people, I approach them from a genuine level. So if I meet someone that I'm a fan of, you know, I'll let them know like, oh my God, I'm a huge fan, I love this. But usually I feel like I'm, because I'm a musician and I'm an artist myself, and whether I've told them that or they know that, or somehow usually early on, I sort of establish with people, like I'm in the game, I'm doing what you're doing. Maybe I may not be as, you know, famous or established or whatever, but like, I'm not just some kid off the streets. But at the same time, I let them know, like, I am a fan. Like, I'm not playing with that. Like, if I'm going to meet someone, like, you know, like when I first met Cherie Curry from the Runaways, or I actually played with Bob DeRoe of Schoolhouse Rock, the guy that wrote all the Schoolhouse Rock
really?
Songs, like, I'm just a bill.
I'm
and,
just a
you know,
bill.
Lolly, lolly. Dude, I went on tour with him for, like, months. Like, and the way I got that gig is the same way I got the gig with Wayne Kramer and Sylvain Sylvain and Dennis Tech and Cherie Curry. And the same way that I, you know, it's just, I go up to someone that I truly admire and I tell them how much I admire them in a super nerdy way, to where they're like, oh shit, this guy's not just a fan.
Wait.
He's like a motherfucking fan.
Does he tour on the Schoolhouse Rock songs?
At that time, in the late 90s, Rhino Records put out all the Schoolhouse Rock
that is awesome
as a box set and a DVD.
Right.
And they reunited the band, which was the drummer of Wings, Denny Sidewell, and all these incredible musicians. And Bob DeRoe was the main guy.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Jack Sheldon, the trumpet player, who was the guy who actually sang I'm Just a Bill and all that from Junction, he was on board.
That's great.
And we did a tour, and I was the guitar player, singer for that, or one of the singers for that tour.
I just imagine during the concert, like, dancers come out and paper mache bills and then just dancing. Yeah,
no, we didn't have that kind of budget, but honestly, it was a magical moment.
Let me ask you, Schoolhouse Rock, what is the closer? Like, what is the song that you would close with in school? Like, what is
No, if you look up, there's actually a bootleg that's recently surfaced of a Troubadour show that we did. And God, what would the closer have been? I don't remember.
Like Conjunction Junction, I feel like it's pretty
maybe
up there.
Maybe. We did everything.
That's
we
so
did,
cool.
We did, yeah. I'll tell you one cool thing is that when we played L.A., I got Cherie Curry from the Runaways, who I had done a lot of work with at that point, and her and the Cheetahs have recorded and stuff. And I got her to come up and sing the song Suffer Until Suffrage, which was about the women's suffrage movement. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Bob. And Bob had no idea who the Runaways were, but I was like, Bob, this girl I know, she was the singer of like the most leading like feminist punk rock that they invented, writing original songs, women, the Runaways formed, Joan Jett came out of it, Lita Ford. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, and you've got this song that you wrote called Suffer Until Suffrage, and we should have Cherie come up and sing it. And it'll be like a really, and he was like, well, Frank, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but if you think she's good, you know, I'm into it. And she came and she did it, and it was awesome. And
that, that is so cool.
If you look up like Bob DeRoe, for all you bootleg nuts, if you look up Bob DeRoe Troubadour RAR or file or whatever, you'll find it. It's on some blogs. There's a whole file you can
download.
That's
awesome.
And I'm in there as Lolly Jr. going like Lolly, Lolly, Lolly. And I also sing Naughty Number 9 and Electricity.
That is fantastic. Yeah. That's like the best. Yeah. That's the best news I've heard all day.
Thanks, man. That's my real. You know, people talk about punk rock credentials, and I'm like, punk rock.
Yeah.
Punk rock. That's small time, baby. I've got Schoolhouse Rock credentials. You son of a bitch.
So Frank, I love talking to you, man. And I know you have to get off to rehearsal. So I guess my last question and kind of segue. Into you kind of telling people about where to get the album and whatnot. So it's, you know, you guys are back together. You're rehearsing tonight. What is the energy just like super appreciative to after all these years to be back with your buddies in a, I don't know, garage, a studio, whatever's going on. Is the excitement just like flowing through you guys to be able to reconnect like this again and tell people, you know, you guys put an album together where they can go to get this album, name of the album one more time, and we'll let you go.
Sure. Well, so we're the Streetwalking Cheetahs, and the band, the new album is called One More Drink, and it is on Deadbeat Records. You can pick it up basically on Deadbeat Records' website. We've got it on vinyl, and we've got it on like splatter, you know, colored vinyl and CD. You can also go to Bandcamp, Streetwalking Cheetahs Bandcamp, and you can pick it up through us. We've got a bunch of like cool fan packages and stuff. And it's also on all the digital platforms and Spotify and all that, blah, blah, blah. And we've been putting out, one thing that we did during COVID is that like when we couldn't play for a while, we leaned into making like music videos. And we're a band that like our original lineup sort of predated like just shooting stuff for YouTube without like having a big budget. You know, in the old days, everything was like big budget music videos. And like when we kind of got laid out from doing live shows, we started just being like, F it, let's just make all these weird, like funky, weird experimental films. And we just started making all these funky videos. So that's been really fun for us. But the record is out now and we are stoked to be playing. It's been weird, man. Like our whole thing has just been live shows, high energy. And also we're a band that's been known for in-your-face live shows, which it's going to be interesting to see what it's like.
Right.
You know, I'm a guy who back in the day, and don't get me wrong, I'm not a jerk. I'm conscious of what's going on in society. But back in the day, I would jump into the crowd. I'd climb in your face. I'd spit beer. I might cut myself and bleed. I might fucking puke if I've had enough tacos in me before we played. You don't know what's going to happen. But the reality is that a lot of that stuff is kind of off the table for a while. And even the idea of like sweating too hard or really getting in someone's face. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying that like, I've been playing these acoustic shows where I can kind of keep my distance and everything's kind of copacetic, but like we're about to go and do our thing and we're going to figure out as we go what the rules are, what right. the new rules are. And I think we'll be cool. And I'm, you know, I think we're all down with like adjusting.
You'll adapt.
We'll adapt. You know what I mean? But again, the only bands I've seen in the last few months, because like I don't know about you guys, but like there are some clubs around here that have opened to like indoor shows with
a couple things. Yep.
Yeah, and like they're doing like there's a drummer, they're playing, but it's not like the old days. There's not like people just in a pit or fully dancing. So I don't know what it's going to be like when we play, and we'll figure it out. But I know that we're down for it, and we like the idea of getting back to live music. We're all vaccinated, and it seems like most of where we, the areas that we reside in, Southern California, is pretty well vaccinated at this point. So we're just going to see what happens, man.
That's awesome. Frank.
Well, I'll tell you one last thing. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem.
You can catch the Cheetahs. The Streetwalking Cheetahs are on Facebook, or Streetwalking Cheetahs on Instagram. You can hit us on Bandcamp at the Streetwalking Cheetahs. And, you know, we got a new record called One More Drink. And thank you guys for helping us out and supporting us.
No problem.
And before you go, one more question. Yes, speaking about your video, One More Drink, you complimented the guys you were working with, Scott Chernoff as a comedy writer. And you also said BJ Geyer is the best puppet producer in the business. Can you give me your top five puppet producers? I just want to go over your list and make sure it's credible.
Understood. Well, I mean, if you're going to get really into it, you've got to cite the Henson team, certainly right at the top.
Yep.
And that's going to go for one or two right there. But then also the South Park guys, you know, they've done some puppet work too. And in fact, BJ Geyer, he worked on Team America. So the way that we hooked up with BJ Geyer is that he was a Team America guy, and he also came from Comedy Central. He was doing, I'm spacing on the name. What's the Crank Anchors?
Crank Anchors, yep.
So, and that's another one I would put right in that top five. So essentially, when we made this video, I had worked with BJ Geyer, and he was like a top puppet guy at the time. And I came to him and was like, we want to do some video game. Like, we would basically want to, like, what would happen if Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and Mario and Lara Croft were all, like, we can curse, right? We've been cursing. Fucked up puppets, and, like, what if Pac-Man was on heroin and he was seeing ghosts and pills, and that's why he was, like, running around the mazes? And what if Lara Croft were just in, like, a teen, you know, TNA sort of Porky style sort of, like, you know, college movie? And what if like Donkey Kong and Mario were like vying for each other in like a romance over like a teenage girl, and it got really gnarly? So we made this puppet video for We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For, that is sort of imagining all those things. And then we also did a video for One More Drink, the title track, where essentially we and if I can be emotional here for a moment, please. I said to the band, I want to do a video where it's called One More Drink, and I want us all to look like, you know, we've drank a lot of alcohol, and then maybe as the video's gone on, we actually do drink a lot of alcohol. So if you guys, just for a week, I gave them a week, I said, if you guys could just collect your alcohol bottles, and I thought, you know, like normal human beings. Now, I'm a complete full-blown alcoholic, so I figured I would come in with two full chests, but the other guys are more chill, so I thought they might bring in like a couple. Dude, we had three full garbage trash cans full of alcohol. I've never felt more proud of my boys. They showed up with more alcohol than, I mean, I was like, wow, you guys are really incredible alcoholics, aren't you? And so that whole video, we did indeed bring all those bottles, and they were all from our own personal collection, and whatever wasn't already consumed was consumed. And at the end, when you see me vomiting, and is that blood in my vomit? You don't know. that's all real. This is the commitment that the cheetahs give to our music, you guys. So
I love
thanks for bringing that question up, because I did want to get into that.
That's awesome. Frank, thank you so much for your time, man. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck with getting this record out there.
Hey, guys, I'm glad we ended on Vomiting Blood. I feel like that's really the perfect sort of bookend to...
Absolutely. All right, Mike, the Streetwalking Cheetahs. It's quite a name. It's quite a name.
What do you think our band would be called, Scott? You and me. Like, if you don't come up with an answer, I'll just add something to the end of Shenana. And
I was going to say the Trampoline Vaginas.
Ah, man. That's got a good beat. Like, that sounds like a good, like, 40s band. Like,
I think I
can see my, grandparents sock hopping to the Trampoline Vaginas.
Yeah, see, it's got a good, like, punk rock vibe to it. Like, did you see Streetwalking Cheetahs and the Trampoline Vaginas in the same night? Like, unbelievable show. Easy. Unbelievable. So, yeah, that's what I would go with.
Yeah, you know the Trampoline Vaginas got, like, one song, like, it'll stick in your head. You'll, like, forget the song. You know, what was that thing? They did, and the hook was just like da 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 da, and then there's something tramp vaginas. No, it's on the tip of my tongue.
So yeah, Frank's a good guy. Freaking Schoolhouse Rock, man. That was very unexpected. I did not see that coming in that interview.
If that just like showed up in my Facebook feed, I'm like, I'm there. It's over. There's I don't care. Honey, it's our wedding anniversary. Be quiet. Something important's about to happen.
Shut up and listen to Conjunction Junction and like it. But yeah, Frank, good guy. Go check out that album, One More Drink. Berlo, what do you got?
Scott, I'm weirdly jealous of somebody. And it kind of boils back to a kind of a discussion we had a few weeks ago about farts.
Okay.
Do you remember that kind of discussion?
I do, actually, because we had Maya Sharp on that night where we were, you know, she's playing all these beautiful love songs and like really deep songs. And we're sitting there talking about farts and dumps and things like that.
Yeah. So, I think this was before we joined our friends at the Podcast City Network. So to just quickly summarize the fart story I told, you know, when I was in high school, the most embarrassing fart I had,
the best one
was, when we were playing volleyball and we were in the middle of a match and ball's coming up to me and I'm about to jump up in the air to spike in. And as I'm jumping up the air, like literally every inch I'm going up, a fart is trickling out loudly in front of my entire gym class.
Yeah, it's great.
And
it's great.
It's one of those, if you're like 25 or 30, you'd be laughing your rear end off. That's the greatest story of all time. When you're an awkward teenager, not the greatest feeling. Yeah. And kind of the end of the story, like one of the things I remember about it was going to science class the next class afterwards and having a friend over there, and I could tell he was telling the story of what happened in gym class because he was like talking to a girl. I couldn't hear all the conversation, but he's like, he just shot up like a rocket for what I recall of his story. So
great.
Scott kind of told me I should try to contact him.
Oh my God. Yes.
To get the story. I did not contact him yet, but I'm Facebook friends with him.
Okay.
But this is kind of the sad thing I want to bring up. Like, as I was thinking about contacting him, he puts up on Facebook, he's a DJ now, and he got to DJ for the crowd for Saturday Night Live the night of Elon Musk being on the show.
That's sick. Yeah.
Like that. That's like a sick,
yeah,
crazy, awesome thing right there. And it was one of those moments I am really happy for him. Like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, man, I was going to contact you about fart. And now you're like this super awesome. Now it's even extra awkward if I try to contact you now about that.
You think you could loop my fart noise into one of your songs?
Yeah. Like you bring over Elon Musk and be like, you got to check this out. You got to make this like the theme song for Tesla. Okay.
There's got to be an Easter egg in the Tesla where you could hit a button and my farts come out.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time you go over a speed bump, like a quick fart sound comes right out.
A little speed burst, a little, little extra pickup.
So it's like one of those weird moments of like, I'm kind of happy for him at the same time. Like, it's like I'm doing this podcast and like every time I bring up my podcast to people, they're like, you have a podcast? I'm like, you son of a bitch. I put it up on Facebook 800 times.
So
you're performing for SNL.
So you're saying you're a little jealous of the guy that witnessed your fart, your volleyball fart.
Yeah, witnessed and told and got stuck in my memory of telling the story of the fart, said fart in
See,
the later
part. This can't slow you down. This is even more reason to contact this guy because once we bring him on the show, we could trick him into thinking we're talking about DJing and just pepper him with questions about the fart. Just
like literally like a straight half an hour interview about, do you remember the day? Do you remember how'd you did in science class that day? Or were you just concentrating on telling the story to everybody you saw that day?
Question one. What was it like to DJ for the SNL crew? What was Elon Musk like? Answer, 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 answer. Boom. So, 30-something years ago, do you recall Berlew doing a volleyball fart that shook the school to its core? Tell me about it. Tell me what you remember about it. Tell me what it was like to be there.
I don't really remember much. I was here to promote my business. You know, it's going really great right now.
Third question. Where in your fart rankings is this fart rank on your all-time heard farts? Please tell us.
I mean, I don't really keep a list of the top farts of my lifetime. Like I said, I don't remember.
Fourth question. What would you say the height advantage he got from the fart as opposed to when he did a spike non-fart? Please explain.
Well, I mean, as I told you, as we were setting up the interview, I don't even remember him in high school. And I really want to talk about like some of the equipment that I have and how my business is going. And that's really
fifth question. When you're DJing and you're in the middle of a great set in the middle of SNL, do you ever get distracted and skip a song because you're thinking about that fart?
Not really. The fart has nothing to do with me. I'm very highly successful. I mean, I'm very well known in the DJ world. I want to reiterate that. I really want to concentrate on that.
Is there a day that goes by that you do not think about this fart?
No, I was lying the entire interview. I think about it every single day, and it was the most hilarious thing I ever saw, and I just came on to point and laugh at Berlew.
See, that's how I picture it going. Then, hey, anything to promote before you go? Tell us about your where we could find your vlog on the fart story and your
Well, I actually bought the domain berlewsvolleyballfart.com, and there you can find out all my DJ events and so forth.
Berlew's V-Ball Fart. Catch it out now on the World Wide Web.
On a side note, I actually got him his worst job ever.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, as I knew he was a DJ, do you remember the Vapor Room?
How could I not remember the Vapor Room? That's Michael Berlew's first headlining gig.
That's true. That is true. So, as you remember, our former guest and possibly deceased friend was working with them, and they needed a DJ.
Yep.
So, since I knew he was a DJ,
oh my God,
and he talked about, you know, he was looking for something for Halloween. They were looking for something for Halloween, so I set them up. And like a week later, I'm like, oh, I hope it went well. And he's like, I gotta be honest, it was the crappiest gig I ever had. And he said, like, he set up all, he's like, where do you want the equipment set up? And they said outside. So like, I guess they had a ton of equipment. And he set everything up outside. And then at the last moment, you're like, you know what? bring it inside, bring it inside. So he had to go through the whole process of unhooking everything, pulling it in, putting it in there. Was there for 3 hours, not a single guest showed up. So it was one of those, I thank you for the job, I appreciate the money, but I probably would appreciate it being with my family instead of pulling around equipment all night.
Yeah, as long as he got paid. I mean, I've done some hell comedy gigs, so as long as he got paid. For those of you who don't know, the Vapor Room was
also in the Vapor Room.
The Vapor Room was a vape shop that at one point they claimed was haunted, and we did comedy in it, blah, 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 blah. And Mike got hired to headline one night when we were probably like a year and a half into comedy, and it was
near a stratosphere of shoulda, coulda, woulda.
No, yeah, it was.
But we still said yeah.
But all right, guys, I think it's time to roll on out of here for the night. The fun cast tonight. I guess Berlo, anything to promote before we roll?
You can come back to me in a bit because I don't have anything right now.
Berlo's fart vlog. Go check it out.
No, that is not the business we are promoting tonight. Not by that domain with all your Dogecoin money.
I'm here. My name is Mike, and I'm documenting every fart in my life live on this website. If I'm farting, you're hearing about it. I will quickly promote. I'll return to Tap House 15 Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Show. July 1st, coming up quick, where we'll be with a stacked lineup. Kevin Israel, Brett Druck, Matt Jenkins, and Lynette Palladino, and I will be there myself. But please come on out. It's $45 for a prefix menu, which includes appetizers, meal, dessert, and the show. It was a great time, first time back, and now as things are opening up, we're hoping to pack more people in there. And it's just it's a great night of comedy. We've been doing it for about 4.5 years now, 5 years, and hopefully we see you out there.
And I guess I'll promote one of my favorite breweries, Halfway Crook's Beer. They're in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia, right over by the stadium at Georgia State. Excellent German beers. They're currently having their Czech festival where they're making specific Czech pilsners and items like that, special menus. Every time I go there, great atmosphere. They have rooftop picnic tables where you can have great food, great beer, outside festivals. Always a great time, always a great crowd. Check them out, Halfway Crook's Beer.
And please make sure you go out to Berlo's Fart Vlog. Once again, Berlo's Fart Vlog, documenting every fart every day. This is so sick.
12 years and still going strong.
We have really brought the quality of this show down in the last few weeks. I think it's time for us to retire. I think it's farts and dumps.
We're going out on top. We know we're Hall of Famers, so this is how we end. We just bring it back.
I want to thank Frank Meyer from the Streetwalking Cheetahs for coming on. Guys, please follow us on the socials, Instagram and Facebook, where we're most active, Twitter. And go check out the networks we're on, the BS Podcast Network, the Podcast City Network. And most of all, best of all, you can leave a review for us on iTunes. Helps us get populated there. So we'll be back next week as we climb here to 400 episodes. Guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace.
Hey, what do you think my fart would be like off the trampoline?